This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers, and thank you so much for joining us. First, you may have been noticing a lot of help wanted signs at businesses around Milwaukee. Businesses in Wisconsin and throughout the country have reported difficulties in hiring people, despite the high unemployment rate. In an effort to boost the numbers of workers, 25 states will soon be ending the extra $300 federal unemployment payment that came as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Republicans in Wisconsin's legislature introduced a bill last month that would end the payment, among other pandemic-related benefits. But are these expanded unemployment benefits really to blame for the lack of people seeking work? Kathleen Gallagher is the executive director of the Great Lakes Institute and a Journal Sentinel columnist. She says this push to end these benefits is really missing the point. Her recent column focuses on what she believes could create a higher wage economy in Wisconsin. She spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski all about it.
Let me start by saying, you know, what I'm writing is a column. So, you know, you usually try and step into something messy, and clearly I'm doing that. And I've gotten a lot of feedback on both sides. But what I'm trying to get at is there is a big argument, it mostly goes along political lines, about whether people on unemployment should be getting this extra $300 a week, which the federal government is trying to give them to help with all the issues we've had over COVID. And what I'm saying, I guess I understand the arguments on both sides. You know, on one side, the argument is people have all these issues. Their kids aren't in school. They have all these obligations that make them not want to go back to jobs. And then, in some cases, they're getting paid more to stay home because of the stimulus checks and this supplemental unemployment payment than they were getting paid at their previous job. So, you know, they're being logical in economic terms. Why wouldn't they stay home? Well, the Republicans are really upset about this, and they say people should, the federal government shouldn't be paying people to stay home. And there are all these help wanted signs, as you said. The Democrats have taken the position that we should be helping people during the pandemic. This is all ending on September 6th, the supplemental payments. So what I'm saying is, it's ending. Why are we spending all this time on this debate? Why don't we think about the jobs people are going back to? Do we have the kind of jobs in our economy in Wisconsin that people aspire to? You know, and so I started digging into that. Like, maybe the argument isn't really the $300 supplemental payment. Maybe the argument is, how can we take advantage of this moment and upgrade our economy in Wisconsin? That's what we should be thinking about, right?
So you note that, quote, pushing people back into work in low-wage jobs at hotels and restaurants isn't a long-term fix for our region's economic challenges. And Wisconsin, I think, and other states like the Midwest, we pride ourselves on once being a manufacturing hub, but we haven't been that truly for a long time, right? And you say we need to focus on building a future-proof, higher-tech, higher-wage economy. So can you explain what parts of the current economy structure is not, quote, future-proof, in your opinion?
Well, you know, the Wall Street Journal had an article about how the Southwest is really emerging, you know, Arizona and Texas and Oklahoma as a manufacturing center. So you can look at the kind of factories they're attracting. You know, Tesla put a big battery plant in Nevada, and Arizona has attracted an Intel chip-making plant and a Taiwan semiconductor chip-making plant and a company called Lucid, which makes electric vehicles. The kinds of company, if you just think about what do you think you'll be doing as a consumer 10 years from now? You'll be using all kinds of devices that use more and more chips. Look at the way cars have changed, the way, you know, the key for the ignition has changed in a car, and it's changed because all these computer chips are added to it. So if you think about that, where are we in that economy? Where Wisconsin has historically been is metal bending. Well, you know, an electric car uses, I don't know, I think it's at least half as many parts, you know, so how are we gearing our economy up for these massive changes that are coming? Like, you know, are we going to worry right now about restaurant workers and hotel workers going back to their jobs? Or are we going to worry about what's going to happen to all the people at companies who are involved with combustion, in the supply chain for combustion engine vehicles, which are going away?
Outside of restaurants and hotel workers, I do want to touch upon that a bit later. But when it comes to the narrative about trying to, you know, buy American or get our manufacturing jobs back that have been, quote, sent overseas, you know, is this narrative that's been in our minds for so many years, is that necessarily accurate?
Well, yes and no. You know, some of those jobs are coming back, but they come back differently. They don't come back with the massive number of workers, and they come back, again, I go back to Arizona, you know, they're getting these chip-making factories, which don't, they're more automated, they don't use as many people, but the people they use are highly paid people. And let me come back to, you know, how do I know this? How do I know that Wisconsin isn't as teched up in its manufacturing sector as Arizona is? Well, you know, I went and looked at some statistics. Wisconsin, it's dropped some. It ranks eighth now for manufacturing activity. But guess what it ranks for manufacturing payroll? I mean, you'd hope it would rank around eighth, right? We have a lot of manufacturing activity, and our workers are paid well for it. We rank eighth for activity, and we rank 35th for manufacturing payroll, with an average of around $56,000 per employee. But what that tells me is Wisconsin has become an increasingly low-tech manufacturing state. In the old days, when we made all the new stuff for people, when we made all the equipment that was used in World War II and that was used at factories around the world, we were a high-tech manufacturing state. We were making the state-of-the-art equipment. A lot of it's being made in Arizona now. You know, Arizona ranks lower for activity. You know, they rank 28th for manufacturing employment, but they rank 7th for manufacturing payroll. Their average payroll is around 68,000 per employee. So you just look at those numbers and you can see that Wisconsin needs to attract higher tech industries if we want to maintain our standard of living.
So, of course, I need to bring up Foxconn. Like, isn't this what we tried to do with Foxconn? And here we've been kind of twiddling our thumbs watching nothing happen.
Well, in some ways, you can't blame Foxconn because they are what they are. And what they are is a company with 3% operating margins. They're a high-volume, low-mix manufacturer. They make a lot of stuff with not a lot of change, not very customized, right? And they need customers to be able to make something. You know, half their business is making iPhones and other stuff for Apple. So they need someone else to say, we want you to make this. So compare that with Intel, which is building this chip-making plant in Arizona. They have operating margins of, I want to say, you know, they're around 30%. And if they decide to make it, they can make it. They don't need a customer to tell them, yes, I'd like it made. So yes, we brought in a company that's in this mix of high-tech equipment, but they're not a high profit margin, we can decide to make it company. That's their problem. You know, LCD screens, you know, they were going to make those big screens here, theoretically. You can just make them cheaper in Asia. So there's nothing saying we should make them here in Wisconsin. There's no reason for it.
So I feel like the collective workforce, we're all reflecting on how we do our jobs and how things have been impacted by the pandemic. And I want to bring back how this would impact low wage, minimum wage, all of our labor market workers that I feel so many companies are trying to hire back right now, who are perhaps maybe not ready to go back to work. Maybe they feel it's not safe. Or like you said, perhaps there are some examples where they're making more money on unemployment than these subpar jobs. Why would you want to return to that very quickly, I suppose? So a lot of companies are complaining about labor shortages, but are they just not competing hard enough to attract new workers, like making the job better, improving wages, benefits, training? And does the high-tech market, is there a place to attract low-wage workers, or do you see it still as kind of an unattainable working goal if you don't have a degree or certain training that a lot of the people in the workforce are short of need right now?
Well, part of the answer to that depends upon which side of the political spectrum you're on. But there are facts around this. And, you know, one of the facts is that CEOs right now make, there are different estimates out there, but, you know, somewhere around 300 times more than their typical worker, which is a huge gap and probably as high as it's been since the 1920s. So there is that, that, you know, is in the middle of all that. But, you know, I'll just put it on the table. I will say the term trickle down. I understand that that's, you know, loaded for some people. But, you know, there is the argument that if you can have higher tech, higher wage companies, it raises the level because then, you know, you have more workers making more money who can tip better at restaurants, who go out to eat more, who travel more. You become more of a destination. You know, you have that kind of company here and all kinds of suppliers travel and spend money in hotels. So, you know, it's a virtuous cycle if you can tech things up. And it's all about technology. It's about what do people want tomorrow and what are we making that they want tomorrow?
How do you think a tech company can propose doing this here and get people in Wisconsin to trust that it won't turn into another Foxconn? Like, who are the players who can help ensure that a company has a good history and profit margins enough to get something off the ground?
Well, two answers to that. One, it's not really about convincing people here. Like, everybody wants these companies. So what people here have to decide is that they want them, and then there has to be a real push to get them. I mean, it's very competitive to get these companies. But the other part of the answer is the people I would rely on to think about this are the people who've had the most success growing companies. So what are the companies that have had the biggest, that have had IPOs in Wisconsin, or that have had, you know, the big, have sold for the most money, or that have grown the biggest? And, you know, you look at that, and those are the people you should be talking to. You don't want to be talking to the people who are overseeing a company that's chugging along. You want the people who understand high growth to have the discussion about high growth. And then, I mean, the easy part of that answer is, just look at their operating margins. Foxconn's are 3%.
So we just need to get over that little mind, you know, the bump in the road in our minds of the kind of sour taste Foxconn has left on us, I suppose.
Well, I think it was new for the state to have that kind of big recruiting effort and push, and it was controlled by, I've made the argument in previous columns, and I've been chastised for it, but I believe it. I've made the argument that the politicians and the economic development agencies and the chambers got us into Foxconn. It was a political movement that got us into Foxconn. And, I don't want to blame anybody, but here we are. And what we need to do is move forward. And how are we going to move forward? Are we going to move forward with just those same people thinking about it, or are we going to pull in the people who understand growth? And you know who they are. They're not the typical people who have this discussion. They're the people who have grown companies and are growing them.
Well, Kathleen, I want to thank you for joining me today to talk about this aspect of your work and this side of the argument. I appreciate your insight.
Thanks so much, Audrey. It was fun talking to you.
Kathleen Gallagher is the executive director of the Great Lakes Institute and a columnist and former business reporter for the Journal Sentinel. You can find a link to the column and listen to her podcast on entrepreneurship called How Did You Do That? At WUWM.com. Gallagher spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski. You can hear more interviews like this one by visiting the Lake Effect page at WUWM.com.